Hi, it's Jamie, Progressive number one, number two employee. Leave a message at the... Hey, Jamie, it's me, Jamie. This is your daily pep talk. I know it's been rough going ever since people found out about your a cappella group, Mad Harmony, but you will bounce back. I mean, you're the guy always helping people find coverage options with the Name Your Price tool. It should be you giving me the pep talk. Now get out there, hit that high note, and take Mad Harmony all the way to nationals this year! Sorry, this is pitchy.
Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon on this New Year's Eve. Welcome to All Exits Closed. My guest today is Green Party candidate for president, Ian Schlachman. And he's here to talk about, you know, the fact that there's so many young people with student debt and how the Greens plan to address it compared to the other parties who'll be running, you know, running on the presidential line. So, Ian, Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you too, Cynthia. Thank you for having me on the show.
My pleasure. So you decided to run for president. Why did you make the decision to run?
Oh, that's a great question. You know, for me, I am a millennial. I'm 34. I'll be 35 in December. And you know, one of the things that sort of keeps me awake at night is the income inequality that we're facing as a country. You know, I've run for quite a few offices with the Green Party. I've worked with the Green Party for a number of years now, behind the scenes as well. And I've also run candidates that are successful in winning elections in the Green Party too, like my gubernatorial running mate, Reverend Annie Chambers in 2018. I think for me, what I'm seeing out there is that younger folks of all stripes, millennials, if you will, have so much more in common with traditionally lower income people that have been lower income for generations. I think that this wealth income gap is not closing naturally at all. And you know, despite what we're seeing about GDP growth and Wall Street rallying, it's just never gonna be the same for my generation and the younger generation coming after us. So I think that now's the right time to introduce more radical ideas, socialist ideas, you know, if you will, but really just ideas that are radical to our thinking of our economy and how we perceive debt, student loan issues, the debt crisis at large, you know, the housing crisis, and a bunch of other economic issues that are facing millennials that have faced lower income folks for generations.
When the two parties start introducing their candidates, and there's going to be a slew of them on the Democratic side, and most likely Donald Trump on the Republican side, you as a Green, how will you differ in your articulating issues that they will? I believe that both of them, both parties, are going to toe the line to the corporate structure. So, number one, how are you going to address them? And number two, you know, a lot of people say that millennials do not vote. How are you going to meet that challenge?
Well, those are two fantastic questions. So I'll start with the how we're different kind of philosophy here. So the Greens have always been different. In 2016, when Jill Stein ran for president, you know, she talked a lot about literally canceling student loan debt using quantitative easing. I think that's something that you're going to see coming from the Green Party that you're just not going to see coming from the two mainstream parties. You know, the two mainstream parties, even the more progressive candidates, the best they could do is talk about tax breaks and tax credits for people suffering with student loan debt. And what I want to do with my campaign is go a step further than what we've seen before, openly talk about socialist policies. And when you stop the dynamic of just thinking in the capitalist system and just thinking of the world of tax breaks and tax credits and incentives like that, when you start thinking about actually canceling student loan debt or policies that are considered radical, but I think are necessary. Like, we're also talking about a universal basic income as a right in my campaign. I've been pitching that for a long time. I work with a nonprofit that pitches basic income. A basic income guarantee is something that Martin Luther King was talking about, decades ago. And I think it's beyond time that we took a serious look at this. And I think the time is right now because of the fact that millennials have been so economically disadvantaged. And I think that the ultimate way to look at this is that, a couple years back, probably more than 10 years ago now, it was made essentially illegal. You have to have an extreme hardship now, almost impossible, I'd say, to dismiss your student loans via bankruptcy. Bankruptcy was considered sacred for a really long time, and that's something that couldn't be changed. All of a sudden, the banks get together with the ruling administration and say this is something we can do. So, whenever it's a pro-capitalist thing, it's doable. But whenever it's something that's more socialist or more radical, but is on the side of the people, such as canceling student loan debt or basic income or something else to help people get direct access to money that would literally be life-saving to them, life-changing, all of a sudden you can't do it. It's a criminal, to be frank with you. I think that one of the points of this campaign is to make sure that everyone understands that you can demand more economically than what the two mainstream parties are telling you. And, when you're out there saying, no, I need my student loan canceled, that's the only way I'll be able to survive, start a family, own a home, take care of my other bills coming in. That's every bit of your right to say that. It's your responsibility to say that. And for have mainstream media sit there and say, oh, that's hilarious, look at these folks that are protesting to get their debt canceled. Well, it might be funny to them, but it's life or death for us. We absolutely need to cancel student loan debt. I mean, members of my own family are just suffering for decades under this, our current system. And there's really no end in sight. I'm not seeing anyone proposing a change to the law to make it so that student loans can be put back into bankruptcy. I think there are smaller steps that we can take, but I'm talking about bigger steps as well. And I'll just address your last question too, because one of the things that makes us different is that we are not here to necessarily run and win directly against the Democrats or Republicans. Instead, we're here to grow the Green Party and to grow socialist ideas nationally. So, what that means is that we're looking at groups that have sort of opted out of voting. So we're talking about, in Baltimore, where I'm from, it's a lot of knocking on public housing doors, a lot of work in disenfranchised communities, a lot of work in communities that are facing a lot of crime, and a lot of other problems, and letting them know that there's an alternative on the ballot that actually will help them if we're actually put into office. And then we're working on helping down-ticket candidates get into office as well, like Reverend Chambers, who I mentioned earlier, who's now on the housing board, who actually gets to go up against Ben Carson when he tries to raise the rent on poor people in public housing. So, there's a lot that the Green Party can do, and I think building that base from the ground up is extremely important, and that's why I'm here to do that. And you talk to any consultant that knows politics, they'll be the first to tell you, it's very hard to get millennials to vote, very difficult to get poor people to vote. It's like, well, there's a reason for that, because they've been voting and nothing's happened to really materially change their lives or help them. So it's time that we showed them that there's actually a reason to get out there and vote on election day. That's sort of the whole reason that we're doing this.
Well, one of the reasons that I'm interested in the student loan debt crisis, I'm a baby boomer. And at that, when I went to college, nobody incurred the amount of debt that people are incurring now. And it's really not just millennials, it's older people in their 40s and 50s who feel that they have to make a transition to something, some other kind of employment. So they go back to school, they go back to for-profit colleges, and after they graduate, they realize that there really isn't the jobs available to them, but yet they're stuck with student loan debt. So it's millennials and it's people across, you know, across all ages. And, you know, one of the reasons why I think this is so important is, okay, you know, cancel student debt. That's well and good. But in the meantime, this has been a whole series from going back to like the 60s and 70s and 80s. It's been slowly changing so that people with student debt become indentured servants. So I believe people have to understand the history of this and say, hey, look what the government, look what the banks did to me, you know, and then they'll get outraged. You know, it's okay to say, eliminate student debt, but eliminate student debt because X, Y, and Z, because, you know, the government did this or the banks did that, so forth. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely a problem that's more than just the millennial issue. I'll definitely, you know, say that. I do want to just touch on the fact that, you know, a lot of answers that we get when we see manufacturing plants closing or we see tech companies leaving the U.S. is, oh, well, we'll retrain those people. Well, you know, from the people that I talk to who are in those retraining programs, the dollars are really, really small for the retraining efforts. And oftentimes people are taking on a lot of debt to retrain themselves on new skills. And then they're reentering the job market in their later years. And, you know, I mean, I hear it from my own family. You know, they just feel that if they're a baby boomer, they're going back into the job market, they just don't feel like they're getting the same treatment as younger folks. And I feel like the other part of that, too, just to be frank with you, is that, younger folks will take jobs across the country. You know, younger folks will take jobs at, you know, a fraction of the pay of what baby boomers were making when they, you know, ended their first career and tried to start their second career. So it's not just, you know, I think this is why I like to frame everything back in the socialist framework, because it kind of comes back down to, you know, these incentives that we put out there to kind of push people one way or another in the capitalist system just don't really work. I mean, you can't have a little bit of money or a little bit of tax credit to help someone get back. You know, that tax credit is great to help someone get back into the classroom, learn a new skill. That's great. But ultimately, they are going to come out with debt. They're going to be starting on the economic floor. They're going to be competing with people, you know, a lot younger than them that can move across the country. You know, when they have families established and they don't, you know, they can't move across the country. Maybe they're taking care of their older relatives, maybe they're taking care of younger relatives. So I just think that the whole system is sort of designed incorrectly. You know, I think the capitalist system needs to be rethought. I think we need to put a little more, I think that's why we're pushing for bigger issues, bigger policy issues like a universal basic income, because that would help everyone, keep their standard of living wherever they are. We're not talking about people, you know, buying a yacht. We're talking about people paying their basic bills, taking care of family members, wherever they are. And I know so many younger folks. I mean, you know, my own story is I had to come to the Baltimore, D.C. area from New York just for work, simple as that, just for work. I mean, I knew this area would hire. I knew it was a cheaper area to live in, not D.C., but Baltimore. And so economically, I didn't really have a choice. You know, I love Baltimore now. It's my home. But I just feel like that's the story of so many younger folks. In my day job, not to go on too long about this, but in my day job, I help people start their career in IT, in IT tech support. And I've seen so many people go on to work in jobs that they don't really like just because they pay really well in finance and banking. With the Department of Defense, And they just have to work night shifts, 2-3 jobs at a time, constantly working through holidays just to pay off their student debt. It's not what we envision when we start our career path. It's not what we envision when we're in college. You know, we think we're going to start a new career path and maybe be a little flexible in the beginning. But especially for younger folks, I don't really feel like there's an end in sight. It just feels like you just stay on that, you know, that treadmill to just make sure that you're continuing to work towards paying down your debt. And maybe one day you'll pay it off. Maybe you'll never pay it off. It's quite sad.
In 2016, I'm sorry, when Donald Trump was elected, you had Trump, you had Clinton, and you had Jill Stein. Jill Stein talked about issues that were important. She talked about the student loan debt, but yet she only got a minuscule amount of votes throughout the country. If there's so many millennials and there's so many older people who have incurred student debt, why didn't they hear the message that Jill Stein was talking about?
That's a great question. I mean, for my campaign, it's more about, so I've done a lot of on-the-ground organizing with the Green Party, talking about very local elections, everything from city council to neighborhood associations to people that represent public housing. And I think something that is often overlooked is that, I've been in Baltimore for quite a while now. I consider it my home. And Baltimore is nothing but Democrats. It's all Democrats. And, you know, there are quite a few Democrats that, you know, vote in the Democratic primary thinking that that's their one opportunity to choose the candidate that they really like. But a lot of Democrats don't even go that far, and they actually go, well, you know, I got to pick one of the two most popular candidates, or my vote's not even going to count in the Democratic primary. And then when it's time for the general election, it's really just, okay, I'm a Democrat, I'm going to vote for the Democrat because that's what I do, and I'm going home. So, I mean, that's sort of our current system of voting kind of summed up in the areas that I'm looking at. There's a lot of hope in our current electoral system to vote for some dark horse outsider candidate that's going to come up and change everything. Our system just isn't really most people don't see our system like that. I think third-party candidates traditionally have had a really rough time because of that. So instead, what we're doing in this campaign is we're focusing on down-ticket grassroots candidates. So we want to make sure that people understand that while we don't have any real chance of winning the presidency, we do have a chance of getting a city council person elected in your area. We have a chance of getting your public housing official elected. We have a chance of getting you elected to the water board or to the utility board. And those are incredibly important down-ticket elections. They decide the fate of a lot of people in a lot of areas, and especially areas that are locked up, usually by Democrats in some really urban concentrated areas. So I think we have a different model of organizing. We're not just seeing, okay, let's just start at the presidency. One of the reasons that we're doing this is because we want to refocus the Green Party right back down to the grassroots where it needs to start. We've got to get some state house victories, and we've got to get a lot of city council and a lot of mayoral victories under our belt. And I think when you start seeing those victories in traditionally areas that are ruled by one party, then you'll start to see the tide turn at the top. And that's something that really kind of frustrates me, to be frank with you, not to go on a rant here, but, you know, I think that I worked with the DSA for a while as well. I was one of the first people on their electoral committee, the National Electoral Committee. And one of the things that the Democratic Socialists did was they got state house victories across the country. But it wasn't until Ocasio-Cortez that they got more really national press. And I think this national – if you look at Ocasio-Cortez and her particular style – She's never held a lower office before. And on top of that, she is a tried and true Democrat. Now, that's great for her. I'm not begrudging her that. But I think that's why you're seeing her out there on almost every news channel, is because they know that all she's going to talk about is the Democratic Party versus the Republican Party. Meanwhile, there are people that have run as Democrats or as independents and have won at the city council level, at the mayoral level, at county level, and at the state level, who don't get any attention. Sometimes they're socialists. Sometimes they're just radical Greens. Sometimes they're independents. They just don't get any attention. And I feel that, you know, this is done very intentionally, because they don't want people to know that there's more than two parties out there. They don't want people to know that there's independents that you could vote for running in all different kinds of parties. And I feel like this is a real loss. So it's up to us who are actually out there as independent candidates to make sure that when we do get on, you know, shows like yours, that we're talking about the fact that there are down-ticket candidates, not Democrats, not Republicans, who will really change things. You know, whether we're socialist or not, if you're a Green, you're talking about some really important economic issues that would change the lives of people that have been in poverty for generations, mostly Black and Brown, and people that are millennials just starting out. So it's super important, and I'm so grateful that you had me on the show today so we could kind of highlight this and make sure people understand that it's important to get involved at the grassroots level, you know, whether it's time for the vote or not. You know, these are demands we need to be out there making of our state, of our local, and nationally as well.
You know, you just mentioned down ticket candidates. If the student debt crisis, if student debt is going to be eliminated, that's going to be done through Congress. And if all of the Congress people are either Democrat or Republican, they're going to be beholden to the big banks. And I think that this is a crisis that's spiraling out of control. I don't think we could wait for a majority of Congress people who will address this issue. How do you feel about that?
Well, I mean, I think it's important to mention that, you know, there were members of Congress that were more radical, that were more interested in looking at the way that we do, not to get into this too far, but the way that we do, you know, take a look at the monetary system from a more critical lens, take a look at the Federal Reserve from a more critical lens, and actually open up and have a conversation about the roles of it and what it's doing to the people and not. I think, you know, you look at Paul, if you look at Alan Grayson. I mean, I was told another famous Marylander down here, I'm trying to think of his name, he convened a panel with Alan Grayson on it recently and talked about the time they audited the Fed and actually like worked to look at it from the inside, how it was sort of failing. And that bank failures happen every day, yet that's where we place the most important part of money production. Delman Coates, that's the thing. Yeah, Delman Coates. So, you know, I mean, I think there are folks that are working on this issue. I just don't think that they're getting the attention they deserve. And I think that once they identify themselves as someone who's not a friend of the banking system, they're instantly thrown out. So, I mean, I think that what you could see in the short term congressional candidates are folks that are talking more about Pell Grants and less about public or private debt. You know, when you do finance your college. But I also think that it's important to make sure that you understand the power of the protest movement as well. I think that if we had a very powerful protest movement in this country that made it one of their top agenda items to either cancel student debt or rethink student debt in some very important way that directly hurt the banks, I think that at that point in time, you'd see Congress members take this more seriously. Because let's assume that all of them are corrupt and that they're getting their marching orders from the banks. You know, at a certain point in time, people are saying, we're going to do a debt strike. We're not going to pay back our student loan debt. We're unable to pay back our student loan debt. The economy might go into default. You know, the economy may fall off a cliff because of this major issue. I think at that point, the banks will come together and say, okay, we've got to, at best point, look at other options on the table. So I don't think it's as hopeless as we tend to think it is. I think we have to reground ourselves in the idea of protest movements. I can tell you that, you know, they do work for local issues. I mean, it's definitely a reality. I think, but right now you're seeing a lot of protests on some national issues that just aren't around economic issues. I mean, here in Baltimore, the mayor was thinking about privatizing our water system. There was instant outrage about privatization of the water system here. And a lot of that has to do with boots on the ground, people in the streets actually protesting in front of the mayor's, in front of City Hall. So I think that we've got to take that mentality nationally. We've got to make sure people understand that this affects us in more ways than people understand. We're not just out here calling for irrational demands like cancel all student loan debt. We're out here saying cancel all student loan debt because our lives depend on it, because we won't be able to start our lives until this debt is canceled. The economy will fall off a cliff. And we're seeing this at the grassroots level. We've got to make sure Congress members, whether they're in the bags of big banks or not, understand this at the top. It's as simple as that. That should be our first step in this movement. Our first step should be to make sure people understand why we're asking for this and why this is so important. If we don't have that clear, coherent message of why this is so important, then I don't think we're going to get very far, even with friendly Congress people in office.
With so many people, you know, with student debt, they're running on a treadmill and they're not catching up. You know, people are working more than one job to pay their bills, and they don't have the time or the energy to protest. What do you say about that?
Yeah, I definitely think that's right, but I also think that there's different kinds of people doing different kinds of things in relation to their own student debt. So there are folks out there that are just not paying it, either repeatedly going into forbearance or just not paying it because they're unable to. And there are folks out there that are working 3-4 jobs, constantly working, you know, overnight shifts, never spending time with their families, who are just paying it and struggling through. So I think it's really important to understand the reality for both of those groups. And I think it's important to make sure that thinking about and talking about the fact that this is not, forget about the moral issue. And from an economic standpoint, it's not sustainable. You can't tell someone to work the rest of their lives 24/7. I mean, they can't start a family. They can't buy a home. They're never going to be able to catch up. They're never going to be able to have a quote-unquote normal life, let alone a middle-class life. And I think as you start to see the middle class completely disappear, I think at that point in time, it's up to us who are calling for political demands to make sure that we have cohesive political demands that say, you know, we're never going to have a full economic recovery until we cancel some student debt or cancel all student debt. And I think we have to keep the pressure up and make people understand that, you know, the call has to be universal as well. Because I think when our elected representatives start to look at this issue and, you know, talk to the economic powers behind the scenes, like Alec, for example, you know, there'll be legislation popping up that'll be like, okay, we'll cancel some of it, or we'll give some debt relief here but not here. And it's really important that we stay unified and make sure that we want a clear solution to this. Like, you know, we don't want the Affordable Care Act of the student debt crisis. We want universal student debt cancellation. We want, you know, universal plan for going forward for free college for every public institution. That's the kind of thing we have to stay strong on. And the second we divide ourselves up and go, oh, no, this plan's okay, some of us will get relief, at least we'll be a middle class again, then we're just selling other folks down the river. And I feel like that's the kind of thing that you could do and talk about when you're not just towing the typical capitalist line. I'm not here to say the banks need to make money to keep our economy strong. I'm here to say that we'll never have a strong economy. We don't have people that can ever start their lives. And that's what I'm seeing in my personal circle and even in my friends and family, just folks who just literally cannot start their lives. They can't afford a house. They can't start a family. They just have to keep working to pay down their debt. And it is some of the saddest thing I've ever seen. It really is. It's heartbreaking. I mean, one of my friends, when the and the loan companies, and he doesn't pay his bill, and he doesn't pay he's behind a couple of days on paying his rent on his loan, and he works literally 24/7 to pay this loan off. They immediately call his very old grandmother and threaten to take their house because she's one of the people that co-signed the loan. And the poor woman, you know, is very old at this point and barely understands the phone calls. But this is the kind of economic reality that it is for younger folks out there, for everyone out there. I mean, that could have been anyone of any age just trying to have a better life for them. And, you know, when this was drummed into us, I think that's something that maybe older millennials and baby boomers need to discuss with younger folks, is that it is drummed into us at a very young age that you have to have an education. And the more education you have, the better. And that's just not – that is just really poor advice these days. If you don't have a way of quickly paying off your debt, I don't recommend you even consider going to college at this point. I mean, it's a shame because there's a lot of people out there that could be learning a lot. We could be advancing and growing as a society, and we're just unable to because the high cost of college debt is just so rampant and so out of control. This is a generational issue that's going to bite us. It's going to kick our butt. Other countries are not going through this. Other countries have a rational and coherent plan to make sure their workforce is educated and very well educated for decades to come. And we just don't have that kind of thinking here in the U.S. And when people talk about it, we just say, oh, we're free market capitalists. We can't be thinking about that. That's economic planning. Like, yeah, we should do some economic planning. We should make sure we have a plan to make sure everyone's not in a crippling cycle of student loan debt for generations to come. You can call that socialism, you can call that Green Party, you can call it whatever you want, but that's certainly our agenda. That's one of the reasons I'm running for president.
I know that the Democrats and the Republicans aren't really going to address this issue in, you know, any substantive way. I'd like to work with you on getting mm-hmm. the message out about what young people, older people, anybody who is burdened with student debt, you know, I'd like to work with you on this podcast and in other ways to make people more aware of what's going on and what they can do to alleviate the problem. Would that be okay?
Yeah, yes, of course. You know, in researching for this podcast, a lot of organizations that I used to see out there advocating for debt abolition or dealing with the student debt crisis, such as Strike Debt, I just don't, you know, and I hope if you're listening, Strike Debt, I don't mean to just call you out, but I'm just saying I used to see them very, very active. You know, in researching for this podcast, I haven't seen many folks as active. So I really appreciate you, putting some life back into this incredibly important issue. You know, we can't let this become numb behind the scenes. I mean, there are some family members I haven't seen at my own personal Christmases and New Year's parties and stuff like that for the past couple of years because I know they're working every holiday and they can't afford not to. And it's just, it's time that we make sure that this shouldn't be the new normal in this country. It should be something that outrages us every single time it happens. And I'm really glad that your podcast is here, to keep reminding people of this incredibly important crisis.
Thank you. So, Ian, I hope we talk again soon. I hope we could brainstorm in ways that could make people aware of this problem and what the ramifications are if this problem isn't addressed. So you have been listening to All Exits Close, and you've been listening to Ian Schlachman. So if you like this program, please follow us on Twitter, All Exits Close. And Ian, Happy New Year. Happy New Year to everybody. And I look forward to furthering this dialogue with you. Have a great day. Have a great day, everybody. Thank you for listening.
Oh, thank you so much, Cynthia. Have a great day.
In today's cyber world, the wolves are attacking. Is your company safe? HP Enterprise printers are built to help keep your company protected with layers of security that can stop the wolves in their tracks. Upgrade to HP Enterprise printers and keep the wolves out of your neck of the woods. Nothing is safe if your office isn't HP secure. HP Business Printing, the world's most secure printers. See the wolf and HP in action. Visit hp.com/the wolf.